So part two here, I'm going to be focusing more on the sort of native ants side of the picture and talking a little bit about more general ideas like community assembly, some conclusions that we have come to based on these experiments. Presumably, biological invasions follow more or less the same rules as natural community assembly. And these experiments that we conducted provide a unique opportunity for testing some hypotheses about community assembly. And these do cross levels of biological organization, although I'm not really going to get into that today. There are a number of reasons why exotic species may become successful and dominant in this case we're talking about Invicta specifically. There may be something about their biology that makes them competitively superior. Obviously, many exotic species have left behind natural enemies that may also contribute to their success. And there may be something about the communities that they're invading that makes them more or less invasible. Part of that equation is also habitat disturbance, which is surprisingly rarely discussed in the context of biological invasion, but it's really an important part of the story. In terms of the first mechanism that may contribute to exotic success, this idea of interspecific competition holds a particular place of importance, at least conceptually, in ant communities. It's long been assumed to be one of the primary forces structuring ant communities. However, Walter made some mention of this, and this is particularly true in the case of exotic species. Most of the conclusions drawn about the importance of interspecific competition is based largely on correlational studies. And there's also this other part of the equation, which is what is really the role of habitat disturbance in allowing or facilitating the establishment and population growth of these exotic species. It's long been recognized, Elton looked at this 50 years ago, that there is a link between invasion and disturbance, but really there hasn't been a lot of work, particularly experimental work, done to sort of flesh out some of these ideas. So we conducted this work, in case you didn't know, in the Apalachicola National Forest. It's a great place to do this kind of work. It's a diverse community. Its fauna is fairly well known, and it's very convenient to work in, particularly the kind of work that we were doing. Walter made mention of this correlation that we see between disturbance and fire ant density, and I'm going to talk briefly about, we actually did a lot more than what Walter talked about. We did a series of three sets of experiments, and I'm going to talk first about the work that we did in pasture. These are the most disturbed habitats where you see fire ants in their highest densities, and this is work that we published already, and we did a series of removal experiments here. And these consisted of essentially 10 plots. We had a set of control plots, 5 control plots, and a set of treatment plots. Treatment plots, we conducted removal experiments with hot water. We used hot water because insecticides are general, and we didn't want to interfere with the community at large. And we made every effort to kill and control all of the Invicta colonies over the course of a couple of years. It was actually conducted over 3 years. The results I'm showing you are over 2. And this is the method. You poke a hole in the mound and you fill it up like a cup of water with near boiling water, and it works quite well. The take home message from that work was that in contrast to some of the results I'm going to show you with the experiment that Walter was talking about earlier, we saw no change in the ant community. There was no change in the abundance of co-occurring ants. And there was no change in the diversity. We couldn't really detect any change over time when we removed fire ants from this habitat. It's also very much worth mentioning that this is largely an exotic dominated fauna. The diversity is composed of a large number of native species, which is good, I suppose. But the total abundance, it's a roughly 90% or more in some plots, exotic species. Of course, it's dominated by Invicta. What's of interest here, though, is that we have this highly disturbed community, and what do we see? It's really filled with exotic species. And the native species are there, but they're really there in very low numbers. So on the other end of the spectrum, if we go into habitats where there's little or no disturbance and we find no fire ants, this is where we're making our cross between disturbance treatments and the addition of fire ants. So we're sort of going to the opposite end of the spectrum. And we're conducting additions, which are simply collecting whole colonies, taking them into the habitat and planting them. And we're crossing that with two disturbance treatments, a mowing treatment and a plowing treatment. And this gave us more or less full control over conditions on the ground. The fauna is, it was a diverse group, 71 species, lots of samples on lots of ants. Not surprisingly, very few exotics, and their total abundance is very low in the fauna. Of course, this is in the absence of our meddling. And what we see in the, when we start looking at the data, here we have control, mow, and plow. These are our disturbance treatments. And we're making comparisons here between whether or not we added fire ants in red, no fire ants in blue. And what we see is that fire ants do have some effect regardless of treatment type, but in particular in the plow treatment, on a negative effect on total species diversity. More dramatically, the effect on total abundance is really obvious. And this is, again, different from what we saw in the pasture habitats. But we have to take this with some caveats. First, like Walter said, this is a slightly unnatural situation because we're planting these colonies. What's also of interest is that the plow treatments here, they had a significant effect in the absence of fire ants that was comparable. There's no significant difference here between these two, suggesting here that the disturbance in itself is really sufficient to cause this dramatic community change that we see that has often been associated with fire ants, but it really it's a sequential event where you often have disturbance occurring first and fire ants following up. And to avoid confusion here, we had two controls. We had a sham control where we added soil plugs mimicking the addition of fire ants, and we had a pure control where we did nothing. One of the big drivers of this difference we saw in numbers in the fire ant addition plots was the negative effect that the addition of fire ants had on these two species, Phidoli morrisi and Phidoli dentata. Phidoli morrisi is the most abundant ant in this community by far, and they are more or less ecological equivalents with fire ants, large colonies, high abundance. And what we're seeing by adding fire ants into this habitat is they're doing a very nice job of displacing these two species. And this really drives those abundance patterns that I showed you in the last slide, because they are so abundant. There were a small number of other species that were also significantly negatively affected by the addition of fire ants, but surprisingly it was a small number. And the changes in numbers that we see in this group of species was not as dramatic as we saw with the others. Two of these are Diploropterum thief ants, and these are a couple of generalist species. Interestingly, there were a number of species that were either unaffected or positively affected by either our disturbance treatments or our fire ant additions. And this is part of the interesting part of the story that, again, suggests that habitat is really a strong influence on community assembly, probably the strongest. And we see some interesting things where actually a number of species were positively affected by fire ant addition, which was slightly unexpected. So our conclusions. Really, disturbance drives what's going on in terms of community assembly that we observed, and particularly in the sense of how it determines the number of exotics in the fauna. Certainly, fire ants could potentially competitively suppress some native species, but again, we have a sequential event. Fire ants do not invade these habitats in the absence of disturbance, and disturbance clearly has a negative effect that's as great or greater than what we saw from the fire ants alone. And we're headed in this direction where we think the colony founding is really the key to community assembly. And things like interspecific competition are certainly secondary, maybe even tertiary. There's my thanks. Questions? Well, I actually have a hard time making comparisons. The question is, how do we compare to, I guess, direct tests of competition? Yeah, behavioral tests. I have a hard time drawing parallels for one reason. What we're looking at here are population or community level effects. And I'm not sure that observations at Bates and, you know, those sorts of things necessarily reflect community level effects. And so, there have been some studies that have looked at that, and the conclusions that I've seen are actually not too far afield from what we're showing. Where you see differences are where the focus is on individual behaviors at Bates, and the sort of population level effects are not really considered.
Yeah. Do you have any concerns about the time frame? Like, do you think the time was enough in the experiments to detect changes?
Was there enough time? Absolutely, there was enough time. These are species, we have some of the species in the fauna that we've actually kept close track, some of the exotics of how much they're able to increase year over year. Not the least bit concerned. We have species that are polygyne, that bud. You know, 3 years is certainly sufficient time for the vast majority of this fauna.
The hot water treatment for controlling poly worked all that well. How is it that fire ants are such a scourge of the land across the south?
Question is, if the hot water works so well, why are they still a problem? Well, it's really a local thing. We can only control things locally, and we talk about these things in passing. This was a colossal human effort to pull this experiment off. So it's really not a practical sort of thing. For somebody in their yard, maybe, fine, but generally it's probably not a good idea. Okay, thanks.